Hello. Hello. So very different energy in the church today, right? Yeah, really different. And you know, we say every Sunday to be in love with what is, as it is, and so it is. So my intention today is to be in love with this energy too, because this energy is actually very sweet. You know, that we're all coming together with a common happening for all of us. You know, I had a little trouble preparing today, so I'm just warning you. There may not be a lot of jokes in it, as there often are. But, you know, as I was listening and thinking during I Am Remembering Who I Am, it just occurred to me to kind of ask you, how are you all doing with all of this stuff that's going on in the news? Not well. Some of you are doing well, and some of you are not doing well. Yeah, so we're just here to kind of sit in the soup of all of that. I'm sure there's a continuum of over here is I'm not doing well with this at all, and over here is I'm doing great with this, and there's many little points of light along the way of that continuum. So we're just going to let all of that be here, and hopefully you'll hear something either from me or from the music or from your own internal voice of kindness and love that will serve you in the coming week as we navigate this this unusual situation together. You know, yesterday one of the reasons I said that I'm not really sure what to say was that I spent most of the day coordinating the logistics for a much smaller service, and a service with a lot of precautions in it, and a service where certain personnel might be missing. And you know, I was thinking as I was doing all of that, I was thinking, yeah, this. It's not something I learned how to do in ministerial school. How to prepare a Sunday service when there's a pandemic in effect. And you know, and that's the thing about life, is that it's always throwing us curveballs, because life is infinite and there's always things that we need to learn to cope with. But the gift of that, I guess, and I think that's part of the intention of today, is to find the gift in everything, even if it's scary, even if it's causing us fear or despair or what have you, even if it's any of those things, is to find the gift in it and see if we can use it to bring us into a deeper relationship of knowing the love that is beneath everything and the love that is most definitely within us. So is that something that will help all of you, I hope, is to know that? Okay, good. So that being said, I'm going to start with a story, and this story is not about coronavirus, but it's about a friend of mine who was experiencing an illness. But back up before that, this is my friend. She's a friend from Service Space, which is an international service organization that I belong to, and she is a very active member of that group, and also she is kind of known for loving her grandmother dearly. I don't know if any of you have seen Nemo Patel's Grateful video. And there's a little old Asian lady in the beginning. That's my friend's grandma. She's kind of a celebrity, okay? but she passed away recently, and my friend was just devastated, because I think that her parents are gone, and this grandma was kind of her only contact to her heritage. So she was devastated, and then shortly after that, she got a mild illness. She said she's going to be fine. She didn't even say what it was, but she needed to go to the hospital for testing. And so she went into the hospital, and she saw, you know, the sterile-looking rooms again, and the nurses and the doctors and the efficiency, and she said it just brought up this flood of emotion within her of, oh, man, I just don't want to go back here. This was so painful for me when my grandma was dying, and I just don't want to do this. The fear and the despair that she was feeling over her grandmother's death came rushing back in at her. But then for some reason, probably because of a lot of spiritual practice in the path, in her past rather, and possibly in the path at the moment, she said, you know what, maybe I can do this differently. I could lead with fear and despair and illness, but instead, I'm going to lead this day with grace and humility and kindness. In a way, she's kind of leading with her allness versus her illness, which is the topic of this conversation that we're having here this morning. And the results that she had from just choosing to lead with her allness versus her illness were astounding. It didn't, you know, put the medical center on the map. It didn't put her on the map, but it just was 100 different little tiny acts of kindness that opened up her heart and made her eager to come to the hospital the next time. She said it started in the parking lot when she asked somebody for directions, and this person that she asked said, "I don't know, it's my first day here, I can't help you." And they both just thought that was kind of funny. They laughed. They shared a laugh together. She approached the person behind the desk, and she was just coming off of a break, and her station was all disorganized. And rather than getting impatient with this person, this friend of mine decided that she would instead just give her space and say, "You take as much time as you need." How many of us have done that when we want something to happen? Show of pinkies. Take as much time as you need. And so the woman took as much time as she needed, and it really wasn't very much time. And then she came, and she was fully attentive to my friend and helped her and went the extra mile to help her. When she went to have her blood drawn, the phlebotomist noticed this necklace that she was wearing, and rather than just sort of sloughing it off, they had an intimate and eager conversation about the necklace. And then it was in the period of time when it had started that we weren't allowed to shake hands, so they did a little foot dance at the end of the interaction, and they thought that was fun too. That was an act of kindness. And then she was waiting in the lobby to see another doctor, and this woman in front of her dropped her cane, and she stood up to get it, and a gentleman stood up to get it. My friend got the cane for the woman, but she said as she handed it to the woman, she looked in this gentleman's eyes, and they smiled at each other, a knowing smile, and she said they knew that they were made from the same cloth, made from the same cloth. And so all of those little, tiny, beautiful actions meant something. They meant something. Kind of like how something like a virus, which is tiny, microscopic, but when it multiplies, it has a powerful effect. What if the same thing is true for kindness and generosity and grace and humility? And isn't this a great opportunity that is coming forth for all of us to do our best to live from those places, the place of grace and kindness and generosity and love, to live from our allness instead of this overriding cloud of illness that seems to have taken up a lot of room in everybody's consciousness? And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, to be vigilant about what is going on in the world, to be vigilant about the coronavirus. But it is interesting also in our vigilance to be vigilant inwardly as well, to look at what our minds are doing with this. I think that our minds, for one thing, this is going a little bit deeper than the mind, but into the heart and the being, I think that our minds and our hearts and our beings are wrestling with impermanence. This virus that showed up and started sort of wreaking havoc, I think, made us all aware of our impermanence. And I ask you, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's probably one of those yeses, you know? It's both. You know, in Kustala, if you weren't here last week, we had one of our favorite Buddhist monks come and speak, and he gave a really rip-roaring comedic talk about old age, death, and illness. Woohoo! And it was actually really, really fun, really good. These things are inevitable, and so much of the time we're scuttling around being so busy with everything that we don't actually take time to recognize our mortality in this body and then do the things that we would do if we knew that we only had a short time left to live. You know, that beautiful poem that Hugh read, a lot of people have sent me that poem, and it's really, that talk about going viral, that poem has gone viral. A lot of people know it, but it just felt so appropriate for today. Was just, you know, take time, treat it like it's a Sabbath, that every moment is a Sabbath, that every moment is a time to turn within and focus on that which is really important, which is our families and our friends and our loved ones and our spiritual practice and our acts of generosity and kindness that we can do in the world. That's what really counts. And I think that impermanence can make us aware of that. The other thing about impermanence, though, one of the reasons it doesn't always make us aware of the good that we can bring to the present moment is the fact that impermanence also brings up a certain sense of uncertainty. And we, as a human species, are not fans of uncertainty, for the most part, right? And actually, it's kind of the way that our brains work. I was reading a study yesterday about uncertainty, and it was saying that there have been testing, a test done on people's brains, so several tests, where they tell the subjects that group A says, you are definitely going to get a shock, an electric shock. Group B, they say, you may or may not get an electric shock. 50% of you will get a shock. The other 50% won't. The subjects in group A that knew that they were going to have pain actually did a little bit better than the subjects in group B. Because in group A, okay, it's just the pain, right? Okay, it's just pain, I know what it is, I can cope with it. In group B, it's the pain, the possible pain, but it's also, will I have pain? Will it be painful? How much will it hurt? Okay, I've gone through 20 minutes. What if they're teasing me and the next one is a really, really bad shock? What about that, right? And that's the way we are with a lot of things, is that so often we want so badly to have certainty that we start making stuff up, right? I just said a bad word, right? We start making stuff up because we want so badly to be certain. And not only are our brains geared to be a bit perturbed by uncertainty, but they would rather have something certain that is bad versus something uncertain that is good. We are geared to maximize the bad. This is just the way we're made. Maximize the potential bad and minimize the potential good. Now, that's the way that we're made, but it doesn't say that we have to be that way. There is something within us, a wiser self, the presence of love, the presence that knows that we are one with absolute reality all of the time, the presence that knows that we are one with God, that we are one with wholeness, that we are one with health and power and presence and peace, the presence within us that knows all of that, that can override that general biological tendency to focus on disasters and make them real, to focus on even potential disasters and make them real, and help us to move into the place that says, maybe this isn't the way that it has to be. Maybe there is something greater that me, in my limited capacity, in my human brain, hasn't even thought of yet. Because again, we are dealing with allness, not illness. We are dealing with the unknown mystery of grace that is greater than what we can imagine. We are dealing with the power and the presence of the Most High that is also the most intimate. We are dealing with that which can serve and solve anything. You know, the old-time metaphysical people that I don't often follow so much, but something that they said is really great that I want to share with you. They say that any time a problem comes up, it is there because there is already a solution in divine mind. We are calling forth the solution for COVID-19 now through our collective consciousness. Through our collective consciousness, as the Gurdjieff people would say, through our conscious labors to stay on track and to lead with allness, and also through our intentional suffering, which is our intentional letting go. Letting go of the story that it's going to be horrible, because it may not be. In fact, if we really believe, we trust what Jack Kornfield said. Jack Kornfield, a Buddhist teacher, a wonderful meditation teacher, among other things, he said, this illness is not against us. It is for us. This illness is for our awakening to a greater truth. This illness is for our knowing of allness beyond appearances. Now, what I've said so far, pretty much, has been kind of theoretical and intellectual. How do we get that knowing into our bodies so that we are living like the truth of what I just said, that this is about allness, not illness? How do we live like the truth is true instead of living like the falsehood is true, which is what so many of us are tempted to do, right? Because of that brain stuff that I was talking about before, this tendency to latch onto something bad because we feel like, oh, if I know what it is, maybe I can control it. How do we live like the truth of allness is true? You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is I think sometimes our response to this particular illness depends on which set of facts we are looking at. I'm, again, part of this global community called Service Space, and I've been getting data from all over the world. And my favorite website to monitor the progression of this illness, and I kind of have to do that because of my position here. I have to make responsible choices with the board about how we're going to, you know, progress with Sunday and other things. My favorite website shows the total number of illnesses, but it also shows the total number of people that have recovered from this illness. I think a lot of times the stuff that we look at says, okay, there's 150,000 cases, and then you think, oh my God, there's 150,000 people that are sick. But there aren't 150,000 people that are sick. There are 100, and again, that number might be a little low at this point, but there are 150,000 people that have been diagnosed, tested and diagnosed with COVID, but there are about 80 that have had an outcome. 93%, last time I looked, 93% of those people with an outcome were cured, released from the hospital. 7% passed away. And that's not saying that it's a 7% statistic, because we're only looking at the smaller sample of the people that have been released in some way. When you look at the bigger picture of the number of cases, the percentage of people that have died is much lower. Is that too techie for y'all? I'll send you the website. Yeah, I'll put it on the newsletter. Yeah. And it also lists how many new cases there are, you know, per day. And you can see that certain countries, the new cases are diminishing, and I think that has to do with the structures that they're putting in place. Structures like we put in place here, and perhaps even more stringent structures, which we may put in place for a while, knowing, again, that constraints are a call for creativity. Constraints are a place where we can practice at a deeper level. How about that? So I'll keep you posted. I'll keep you posted about the website. I'll put it in the newsletter and send it out to everybody. And it's not the only one. It just happens to be the one that I like. But again, we have to, I think, in terms of comforting our brains and living and embodying and living like the truth is true, first we have to have a handle on the facts that is not biased by hysteria. Right? And there is a lot of hysteria going around. Again, I don't mean to diminish it for anyone, because it is a serious problem, but most people that I know that are experts in the field say that we will overcome this. And I also don't want to diminish it for anybody that has a loved one who has died or does die. But it's not what people are completely making it out to be. Again, think of that solution. Think of that solution in the ethers that is waiting to come down, and perhaps it is a solution that will unify us rather than separate us. Perhaps the solution has already unified us in certain ways. It has helped us see what we want to be and what we don't want to be. We don't want to be people who take copious amounts of toilet paper and then try and sell it for a higher price someplace else. We do not want to be that, right? If you are, well, see me after church. We'll talk. We don't want to be somebody that buys into conspiracy theories. If you are, God bless you. I'm not going to go into all the conspiracy theories I heard, but just the one that I heard that was really funny. Okay, so I read this article about conspiracy theories. It was an interview with two scientists, and they were debunking a lot of the conspiracy theories. The best conspiracy theory ever is that the coronavirus was caused by beer. Jennifer? Patient zero over there. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I think we should name all viruses after beers, actually, you know. The Schlitz, the Budweiser, the Heineken, you know. All right. But all kidding aside, we get to decide what kind of a person we want to be and use whatever constraints are coming up, whatever restrictions are coming up, whatever is coming up as an inspiration for greater freedom and greater awareness of the allness in everything. So that's one thing we can do. That's one thing we can do to use our minds and bodies to start to embody this allness. The other thing is to follow the advice of the prophet, Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. Anyone see any of his movies recently, those movies about him? Oh my gosh, they were so endearing. Fred Rogers said, keep your eyes on the helpers, right? You know, I overheard somebody at the church this morning saying that for every, and I was just eavesdropping, so if I misquote you, it's because I was just eavesdropping. For every bad thing that they see on the news, they see other good things, other acts of kindness. There was an NBA player, you know, when the NBA season was canceled, and he donated $100,000 of his own money to the workers at the arena because he knew that they would be out of jobs and that they needed that support. There was a little girl, a 13-year-old girl, who was having her bat mitzvah, and that had to be canceled because of the virus outbreak. And she boxed up, rather than discarding all of the food that they had paid for, that they couldn't get a refund on, she boxed it up and gave it to people that were in quarantine. There was another event, same type of situation, a huge event that had 20,000 people scheduled to attend and to eat. Instead of throwing out their food, they went to the extra expense of hiring refrigerator trucks and driving the food all the way from someplace up north down into Tennessee where there was a tornado. That was Tennessee, right? Yeah, into Tennessee where there was a tornado so that they could feed the tornado survivors. So many acts of kindness. A group of people that were traveling in Japan and started assembling masks so they could give them to other people. You know, this type of thing can bring out the worst in people, but it also brings out the best. And so whatever creative ways we can find to be kindness, you know, keep our eyes on the helpers, but then become a helper as well. And again, remember that viral theory that a little tiny virus can wreak havoc? Well, I'm thinking about a little tiny virus called kindness that can wreak even greater havoc, that can turn the world on its edge, and that can just get us started into this new trajectory of kindness and goodness and lovingness and recognizing, boy, if one thing this thing teaches us is that there are many, many great equalizers in this world. You know, Tom Hanks got it, and somebody who's living on the street got it. There are many great equalizers in this world, and it could be a virus, but it could also be the kindness and the desire for love that we all share, and our resistance to impermanence and uncertainty, but our willingness, this is where this congregation particularly comes in, our willingness to go deeper than the fear of uncertainty, to go deeper than the fear of impermanence, to go deeper than the fear of fear, and to go deeper than the fear of despair, and to do the spiritual work on ourselves, to trust and to know that there is greatness here, there is great opportunity, and we are part of that change that we wish to see. We are the avatars that we are seeking. All of us, every single person sitting here by divine appointment, no matter where you are with this, whether you're terrified or whether you are feeling completely peaceful by it, something about the way you're showing up in your life can help the entire world. I'm going to close with a quote, because it applies to what we're saying, in that the thing that I'm talking about, that part within you that is allness, that can never be shut down, that can never be canceled. So I'll read this to you. This is from, I don't know who this is, Jamie Twarkowski. Somebody sent it to me. And he wrote, conversations will not be canceled. Relationships will not be canceled. Love will not be canceled. Songs will not be canceled. Reading will not be canceled. Self-care will not be canceled. Hope will not be canceled. May we lean into the good stuff that remains. Let's do that now, and let us pray.